Titans of Text. This episode of Titans of Text is dedicated to Jordan Babbo, to your health today and your health in the future.
Welcome, socializers, explorers, achievers, killers, one and all, to the Titans of Text podcast. We are your hosts, Eric Ostrich
and Danny Austerity Nissenfeld.
And today we have with us Dr. Richard Bartle, who needs no introduction. We're going to talk with one of the founding fathers of not only the MUDs, but of all online games. It's an honor to welcome you to the podcast, Richard.
What fictional world has left the biggest impression on you?
Okay, that would be Middle Earth. Not because it's a particularly wonderful fictional world, but because it showed when I was young what was possible with fictional worlds. That inventing worlds that were fully realized wasn't something that I was wasting my time doing. It was actually possible to create one and gave the impression of being as real as any other world. So that would be the one that would be most impressive. Lord of the Rings, pretty much the same as anyone else, I guess, who's read it. The movies, of course, are somewhat different, but the books, definite. One for the Paracosm fans out there.
Was this something you were like a hobby of your youth? Was wanting to create like a large scale like world building type thing?
Oh yeah, I did that the whole time. Lots of kids create worlds in their minds, but very few of them get to the point where they actually start writing them down, drawing maps, making languages for them, and so on. I mean, I did that. I had several of them. Some of them were had real world components to them. So I might use the real world as the setting for some of them, but for other ones, it was entirely map based, and I wrote all the actions down as a diary of the characters and so on. Why wouldn't I? Why doesn't everybody do this?
I can't argue with that, because that's pretty much most of my youth as well. Did those worlds contribute towards the worlds that became the early MUDs?
Yes and no. They did, in the sense that I learned some of the things that worked and some of the things that didn't work. They did in the sense that I, through playing my own worlds, got the hang of role-playing before role-playing had made it as a thing. So they did in those senses, but it wasn't a case of my saying, wow, I really like that bit out of this world. I'm going to stick that into the world of MUD, the game that Roy Trubshaw and I created back in 1978.
What was it like when MUD 1 and MUD 2 opened? I imagine many of the players at least had a cursory knowledge of text adventure games, but was this new interconnected social nature blowing minds?
Well, yeah, not all of them did know about text adventures, but they did know about MUD when it came around, because it was completely different. It's hard to explain today what it was like playing in one of these virtual worlds when they first appeared, because today people have been exposed to them from an early age, and they're not going to be as impressed as they would be when, you know, you're 20 or something, or 19 or whatever, and you suddenly find yourself in this textually realized game world that is full of other people as well, and that they're really there, and they're not computer controlled, they're actually real people. I mean, it was very exciting for people, because they just hadn't seen anything like it before. Now today it's hard to imagine what that could have been like. When I was young, I grew up in a small, very small town on the coast, 250 miles from London. And the first time I got to London, I was like 18. And I went down and I was like, oh, wow, this is fantastic. And that's actually Buckingham Palace. That's 10 Downing Street where the Prime Minister lives. Oh, I didn't realize it was so close. And oh, I was absolutely amazed by it. Now, my kids, because I now live closer to London, they went on school trips to London. So for them, it's not something at all impressive as it was for me. Yeah, they go down the Mall and see Buckingham Palace at the end, but they're not going to be as that I've seen that on television as I was, because it's already been inculcated into their lives. And so it is now with virtual worlds, MMOs, whatever you want to call them. They're part and parcel of people's life. People just, you know, why were they ever so special? Well, they were so special because before then there was no way that you could share a reality with somebody else. But from then onwards, there was, and that makes a big difference.
You've mentioned in the past, maybe far in the past at this point, that Roy Troubichaud was mostly interested in the technical aspects of, you know, getting the world working, and that you, and this is a very selected quote, turned it into a game. What were the gaps that you filled in for that? Not diminishing Roy's contribution things.
But I never would.
But where were the gaps that you filled in for that?
Okay, so Roy was interested in the world creation at the physics level. He was interested in building the world, how it operated as a world. But he could do content, and I was interested in the content, but I could do physics. So we both could do all of it. It's just that we had different interests. What Roy had originally envisaged was a world which had rich enough content in it that people would find things interesting to do without the world itself telling them. So that's how reality works, the world that we live in. You don't get points for doing things in reality. There's nobody you go up to and press a button and out comes a quest. The interactions that you have with the environment and with other people are rich enough that they give you goals, they give you objectives, and then you can attempt to achieve these objectives, and things get in your way and things help and people get in the way and people help and so on. So that's what he was hoping would be the case with MUD. However, it turns out that you need a bit more content than we had. The computers that we were using, which were quite powerful by those in standards of those days, aren't all that powerful by today's standards. And we couldn't do it. We didn't have the time. But we did. We always thought of MUD as a game, just that we wanted the gameplay to emerge from what players were doing. But because there was no capacity for the content, what we had to do instead then was to turn it into a game by embedding in the physics concepts of points, levels, scoring, things like that. And this is what I did. I added these things to the physics of the world so that we got some gameplay that was directing the players, because they knew that the idea was to get points, go up levels, so you get more powers so you can get more points so you can go up more levels. And that was then embedded in the code. So what we were hoping for was an emergent world design, but what we actually eventually had to do was, within the world that we had designed, explicitly code achievement systems, if you like.
So you've just said, the achievement systems that MUD and MUD 2's design had. Now, you were involved with, on some level, MUD 2 well into after the advent of the internet, or at least what most people consider the internet, which is the web and websites and people putting content on the web. How did that proliferation of internet access and availability of information, especially to the point of people making walkthrough guides and cheat lists, affect your design? Did you change anything, or was it just, people that want to look this stuff up will, and they'll just essentially cheat themselves out of the experience?
No, we didn't have any much problem with that. First of all, when the World Wide Web came along and people thought that that was the internet and that's how it all started, just prior to that, MUDs, not our MUD, but MUDs in general, took up about 11% of the transatlantic bits. So about roughly 11% of the internet were MUDs back then. So when the World Wide Web came along and all these people came along and started looking at web pages and so on, these were mainly, to start with, they were mainly academic sites and a few adventurous businesses. I think Kellogg's was the first World Wide Web I saw advertised on an advert. But after that, they became to have a lot of pictures in it, and they weren't particularly games-oriented. Now, back then, to access the internet, you still needed a modem. It wasn't all fiber optics or everything, and it was very slow. So people who were playing MUDs would be playing them still in text. It wasn't till the mid-90s that people were able to work with the idea that soon bandwidth's going to be enough that we'll be able to make a graphical world. We always knew there was going to be them, but we didn't have the the bandwidth to do it. Now, when they started making the graphical worlds, yes, that attracted lots and lots of people to playing those worlds, because by then the idea was that computer games were graphical. So the video games, that's where the video bit comes in. So those people did have those troubles. We didn't ourselves. I think on two, perhaps three occasions, somebody wrote a cheat list and hosted it on a website, and I just emailed the person in charge saying, look, this is an old game. It wasn't designed with the expectation that people would be putting walkthroughs up, and it rather spoils the fun of the people who are playing, because a lot of them are playing because they like the idea of finding things out. They don't like the idea of somebody else just telling them because they've read it online. So I did. I wrote a couple of emails a couple of times, and yeah, the hosting people took them down. I don't know if you'll find a walkthrough for Mud 2 now if you were to look on the internet. Maybe you will, maybe you won't, but probably not. Or if you do, it won't be a very complete one. Because the people who've played it to the level where you do understand that aren't typically the kind of people who are going to want to spoil other people's experiences.
With the advent of some of the second generation engines like LP, Mu, and Deku, proliferation of MUDs exploded. What do you think of when the dam broke in the early 90s?
Oh, I thought it was great. We didn't make MUD to be a commercial venture. We made MUD because we wanted people to be free of the constraints that society and reality in general put on us. So the more of them there were out there, the better. And I still think that. The more of these virtual worlds there are, then the better it is for us. More MMOs, yeah, because reality sucks. What we were doing was trying to make a world that was, well, back then we were thinking, we were hoping it would be better than reality, but it turned out we didn't have the hardware to do that. But we were trying to say to people, look, it doesn't matter what fate has dealt you in real life, in terms of age, looks, gender, whatever. Here, you can be and become whoever you really are, and you don't have to listen to that. You can get past all that. You can just play these worlds and be the person you really are, and never mind what rich kids are doing, because they can live in another world where people do get judged on what they wear and what their accent is and so on. So we were trying to make a world that as an alternative, as a competition to reality, and the more of these that there are, the greater the chance that we're going to get ones that really are alternatives to reality, so that people really can say, you know what, just stuff it. I'm going to go here where my friends are, where I'm respected, and where I don't have to listen to people babbling on about nonsense. So we were pleased that these things took off. Of course we were, because that's what we always wanted. They've been diluted a lot since then, and that's rather frustrating, but their time will come. I'll probably just be dead though, but though they will come.
As a quick follow-up to a small thing there, I have to ask, have you ever been to a focused convention for one of these games? Like BlizzCon was mostly about World of Warcraft in the beginning, or even like a Comic-Con to watch people, like live people immersed in that world walking around?
We used to have what we called MUD meets, where the players of MUD would come and meet up in the real world. I mean, there weren't so many of them, maybe 30 people at most would show up at in a pub or something in London or Edinburgh or something, and then we'd all chat about the game and what we did and so on to each other. So we have had those things before. We didn't used to dress up and so on, because that kind of immersiveness isn't the kind that we were interested in. I mean, pretending that you're, I don't know, Jaina Proudmoore out of World of Warcraft isn't going to make you who you are. It just showing other people that you're such a fan of this character, and that you've got a wonderful way of presenting yourself as them. MUDs weren't about pretending to be specific other people. They were about being yourself. Now, as regards to having been to conventions for today's larger MMOs, I've been to the EVE Online one a couple of times, not because I'm a player, but because I was invited to speak at them. Haven't been to World of Warcraft ones or BlizzCon or anything like that. I've been to some general games conventions, Gen Con, but I haven't been to any Comic Cons or anything like that. No, I mean, really, if you're a 59-year-old bloke wandering around these things, you do start sort of stand out as being kind of creepy. So I wouldn't want to be involved in that anyway, unless I was invited to talk at one or something.
Well, yeah, that is true. I can understand that sentiment at this point in my life as well. So on MMORPGs or the evolution of where MUDs are going into graphical worlds, when they first started being graphical, RuneScape, EverQuest, in through World of Warcraft, a lot of people recognized these were graphical MUDs. They still had a lot of the same principles as a lot of the what you might call a hack and slash MUD.
Yeah, yeah, they were called graphical MUDs to start with. They only got called MMORPGs because people were starting to come out with these games and saying they were multiplayer and they had like 8 players and so on. And so we needed a term to say, well, no, actually there's more than 8 people in here. So this massively multiplayer term came about. The first person I heard who use it was a guy called Clement Chambers, who did it for the Ultima Online. People were wanting to launch the game in the UK, and they said, what should we call these things? And he said, well, not multiplayer, they're massively multiplayer. So that's the first thing I heard about it. He told me that, and then I heard it a few weeks later. But he didn't invent the term massively multiplayer online role-playing game. He was responsible for the massively multiplayer. I spoke to Richard Garriott about this, and because I said, look, I'd heard this term before, and he said, that's probably true, but he was the one who came out with massively multiplayer online role-playing game. I thought, yeah, that probably it is. That is right. I mean, it's one of these things where there's a number of sources. I have heard of other people. There was a Kingdom of Drakkar and some other areas where people were discussing what to call these things and came up with similar names. I've spoken to Jessica Mulligan, who's a long-standing person in the MMO industry, and she said she first heard the term back in something like 1991. So it's one of these that's been invented multiple times over and over, and somehow it's stuck. But anyway, the games themselves, they're just MUDs. I mean, they're the same thing. Deku MUDs are the prototype, well, not the prototype, EverQuest was extremely related to Deku MUDs. So much so that when it came out, a lot of the players were thinking, well, EverQuest seems to be just Deku MUD with a graphical front end bolted on the front. And since Deku MUD was not freeware, but it was anyone can use it, but they have to make it available as well. So it was not free software, but free licensed kind of software. They were saying, well, EverQuest should actually be free, because if it's using Deku MUD, it should be the Deku MUD code base. It ought to accept the conditions under which they were given. And there was actually threat of legal action, but the EverQuest people swore an affidavit to say that there's no Deku MUD code in EverQuest, and that was enough for the Deku MUD people. But that's how closely similar they are. There are rumors that there were spelling mistakes in Deku MUD that also made it to EverQuest, but I've never actually seen any of those, but well, those are the rumors. But I've spoken to EverQuest people and said, no, we wrote it all from scratch. So, but the thing is that they are extremely close to each other. The Deku MUDs are EverQuests without the graphics, and World of Warcraft was written by people who run big guilds playing EverQuest, and many of the games that followed World of Warcraft were based on World of Warcraft. So there is an awful lot of Deku MUD in these games. And in fact, some of the things that we saw in these games took quite a while to make it into MMOs, like instancing and phasing, which were present in Deku MUDs. So yeah, I mean, there's no question about them. They're the same. It's just the interface is different. One's got a graphical interface, one's got a text interface. In the future, we'll have VR MMOs. When these come out, I'm sure there'll be people saying, no, these are completely different to the ones like World of Warcraft, because these have got 3D graphics and World of Warcraft's only got 2D graphics, or 3D if you put on the glasses, but not actually 3D presence glasses. And I'm sure the people will be saying that will come up with a completely different term, and there'll be people arguing that they aren't. But really, it's as if MUDs are black and white movies, and today's MMOs are talkies, and in the future we'll be getting some color, but that's pretty well how we are at the moment.
You know, we have And this is more or less recent for non-MUDs. MUDs have actually gone through this a few times. Some of the larger ones that were around, 20-something years ago. World of Warcraft Classic has come out, and as well, City of Heroes, which barely predates World of Warcraft, has its public servers up again. What do you think is driving this return to what is essentially a 15-year-old game at this point? Do you feel like the modern versions of MMOs, like current World of Warcraft, or take your pick of another one like Aeon or any of the other ones that have come out recently, you think they've lost something, a social or exploration? Or do you think that people are trying to return to mechanics or to design that we've just lost over this time?
Yeah, what's happened is they've been diluted. All these quality of life changes, they keep adding things to them, making it so much easier, which widens the audience. But the problem is that it takes away some of the gameplay until eventually people, if you can buy success, well, success is meaningless. Things like this. Now, World of Warcraft, when it came out, was regarded as something of what they used to call a Care Bear game, because it wasn't all that difficult. Your character, when it died, got a nasty slap on the wrist, for a couple of minutes running back to your corpse. So World of Warcraft itself isn't actually all that hardcore when you consider what some of the ones immediately before it were like. But it does have more of a sense of a world to it, more of a sense of a journey. It is about leveling up. It's not about the end game. It doesn't have all these quality of life things, teleporting around immediately and so on, all the looking for group finders, daily quests and things. And that means that it's more of an experience than the ones that are just there. I won't even bother reading the text of the quest. I'll just follow the little sign that tells me where to go. This doesn't just happen in games. I was talking about this at a conference in Hong Kong once with an Australian guy, and he said, what you have here is sports cars. You see, in the 1960s, sports cars were good. They were fast, they were nippy, great responsiveness. At least the steering felt like something. When you put your foot down on the accelerator, things happened. They looked good. Well, the British and Italian ones did. I can't say so much about the American and German ones, I'm afraid, sorry. But what happened was the people who were buying the sports cars had their sports cars. And so the market was stagnant. So they thought, the car manufacturers thought, well, let's make some more. Let's improve the sports cars. Let's give them power steering. Let's give them more suspension. Probably putting seatbelts in them was a good idea. I will concede that. Let's give them thicker tires. Let's make them a bit bigger so that they're not so small, give you a better viewing angle, make you higher up. Let's add some more seats at the back. And so they kept doing this until, and people kept buying them, but in the end, the sports cars were indistinguishable from the regular saloon cars. And if you wanted a sports car from the 1960s, you had to buy a sports car from the 1960s. And then Mazda, the Japanese company, were looking for a new car, and they had this guy there, I think he might have been English, who suggested that they look at sports cars. So they did their research, and they found out that there was a whole group of people who just wanted a proper sports car but couldn't get one. So they designed the Mazda MX-5, was it? Or M5, X5, Mazda something, MX-5, I think it is, as a return to the aesthetics of the old sports cars. And all those people who'd been waiting for a sports car that really was a sports car bought it. It became the best-selling sports car ever because they were hankering after the past. Now, with MMOs, I was rather hoping that someone would design and develop a new MMO that went back to the days of the past. But no one's been doing that. However, unlike an old car factory where you can't suddenly pull out all the components of the machines that make an E-type Jaguar, with an MMO, you do still have the code from back then, and you can modify it and bring it up to scratch and tidy it up and release it. So that's what seems to have happened, and that's why people are going there, because that experience, which they wanted, they could no longer get in MMOs, because MMOs have been, in order to broaden their appeal to the masses, they've lowered their appeal to the core gamers. But there are a lot of core gamers, and when you return to the core values, then the core gainers would go back to it. So that's sort of what's happened here. I don't know if anything's going to happen from that, whether there's going to be another revolution where somebody else is going to bring out a game that does everything the core gamers would like, but in an innovative fashion. I'd like to hope they would, but these things cost so much money to make that someone's going to risk losing a lot if it's not done right.
So I guess sort of on a similar vein, let's talk about the revival of Dead Worlds like years later. So MUDs sometimes go dark to like hosting fees or staff members' lives, and the community will often make a concerted effort to pull out the code and reverse engineer the game so it can live again. It's a conflict when the original jumps back out of the Lazarus pit. How do you feel that this affects the community at large?
So what you're saying here is that a MUD or even an MMO has died, but the players managed to resurrect it. The previous owners, or current owners probably, noticed that the resurrected version is doing better than they did. So they think, oh, we'll have a piece of that action. And either they attempt to close the resurrected version down, the clone that's running, or they leave it up and then bring out the official version and try and lure everybody over. So that's what you're asking about. And then you're saying, is there a conflict there? Well, obviously. And then you can either work with the people, which is what Blizzard seems to have done, or you can try and shut them down, which can happen. You can turn a blind eye, which is usually what happens. There are some MMOs that were kind of niche, didn't make a lot of money, but if you're not in the business of making money, you're just doing it for fun or because you want your community, then you can carry that on. This has been happening. The original Myst Online, that was closed down. The community rebuilt it in, I think, their.com, and then that got closed down, and they rebuilt it in Second Life because they didn't have access to the actual code. But the community kept going on. But what happens there is that the community that carries on is like an expatriate community. And if the virtual world were suddenly to reappear in its original form and they went back, they'd feel like aliens in their own land, if you get what I mean. As for what should happen, well, if someone has closed down a virtual world, one would hope that they would say to the players, okay, you can run it. You can do what you like. You know, we shut it down. Obviously, we don't want it anymore. So here, knock yourselves out. But if you do make a profit, then kind of we'd like to see some of it. That's probably the ideal thing to happen. But that isn't what always will happen. The smaller the virtual world, the greater the chance it would happen. Because why would you want to keep hold of the code for a virtual world that you've shut down? And if there are people willing to make a go of it, Meridian 59 was shut down. The players clubbed together and bought the code, and then they ran it again for another decade and then had to shut it down again. So these things can happen. With text MUDs, it's a lot easier to happen because you don't need all the art assets or things like that for it. You just need log files and you've got the text. As they're so small, then yes, some of them are quite ephemeral, but other ones have been around for 20, 25 years, get 2,000 players every night, making money hand over fist.
Both Eric and I are administrators and belong to a group called the MUD Coders Guild, which is pretty much a group of a few hundred odd people so we're all of us, almost all of us at least, are pretty much making a MUD engine from scratch. You know, some of it is for our own edification, like me, who ran a MUD in the 90s, and I just want to recreate that, you know, with better code. Like, we always think we can make more elegant code than we did back then. And a lot of people do it to learn a new programming language. Do you see MUDs as an educational tool for learning programming or learning writing or learning world building? Do you see that?
So there are many, many reasons why people create virtual worlds. MUDs being virtual worlds are among them. And that's one of them. People do make them because they want to teach themselves something or to use it as a vehicle to teach somebody else something. Whether they're teaching themselves programming or teaching themselves world design is another issue. I mean, I've, I was going through for a talk I gave a couple of months ago, all the reasons that anybody would create a reality, and came up with 32 of them. So there are lots of reasons. Essentially, it's who's your audience, and then it's, are you doing it for the players? Are you doing it objectively, or are you doing it subjectively? So if your audience is the players, you're just doing it because you want to make help the players, in the people who are going to play it. Well, you could be doing it because you wanted to teach them something. You could be doing it because you wanted to give them some kind of freedom. You could be doing it because you want to help them create things. You could be doing it for your players because you want them to treat you like some kind of a god. I mean, there's many reasons that you would create it just for the players. But you might not be creating it for the players. You might be creating it for yourself. You might be creating it for society. You might be creating it because you believe that there's a higher power in reality, some kind of deity. And if you create a world, then you're doing that deity's duty, a bidding. You know, there's all sorts of reasons people could create them. And yet, creating them because it helps you understand coding or understand particular kinds of coding, like language design or database management, that's as good a reason as any. You don't have to have the same reasons to create them. And they are good at that. They do teach you coding.
What do you feel is needed to bring new blood into MUD specifically, attracting the young away from graphical online worlds?
The strength of MUD are their weakness. These worlds are created in the minds of the players. And what players create in their minds is more powerful than what is created for them on the screen in a graphical world. So if you're playing a MUD and you see a text description of an immense fire-breathing dragon or something, in your head you will construct a vision of that dragon, and that will be peculiar to you, which means it's more powerful for you than somebody who draws a dragon, or I say draws, you know, spends months rigging and animating a dragon. Your vision of a dragon in your head will be better than theirs because it's specific to you. It's bespoke to you. It's customized. That's if you've got an imagination. If you haven't got an imagination, yeah, okay, go off and play the graphical worlds. The thing is, MUDs are more immersive than graphical worlds. They're more thoughtful. They've got so many more commands you can do, more verbs, because it's all the output and the input are in the same format, so you don't have to keep adjusting. If you're thinking in words, then you're writing in words and reading in words. You don't have to think in pictures and commands in WASD. It's all integrated, and it's much easier to get immersed in a MUD. They're much more powerful. You can do so much more in them than you can in a graphical world. You can destroy components. You can build vast realms, but they're text. And if you show people text, then yeah, it's all right, but I got to read that. I'm not going to read it. So it doesn't matter how good they are. No one's going to play them if they're not going to read the words. I, every year, get my students to play MUD 2. I get a class of them, about 50, 60 of them, and I make them all log into MUD 2, and they have a ball. They really love it. You know, they have a whale of a time. They're going out there mainly attacking each other to start with, then exploring the world in an effort to find parts where they're not going to get attacked, and then getting points and going up levels. And they play the game for 2-3 hours and they love it, have a blast. Do they ever play it again? No, because it's text. That means typing things. So there's your main problem. You got to find people who are willing to see past the interface in order to gain the benefits of that interface. The power of MUDs is the text, but that's the one area that graphics beats it, because it's got immediate impact and text doesn't have immediate impact. As for how you attract people to it, well, you can get them young. That's always good. Corrupt the youth. You can find people who are interested in text, approach them. A lot of the people who play today's MUDs find out about them through word of mouth, because they hear from somebody else who's, I don't know, computing society at the university or something, who plays it. But many people just don't know about. When they do try them, then there's not always critical mass. There's not always the newbie experience that they're expecting. People just think that they're an alt that's been rolled up, and they don't treat them as if they're actual, genuinely players. And it can be quite intimidating, and they can, if they play one and get put off, then they're put off them for life. So what you have to do is to make sure that when they do start playing, they play ones that are welcoming and at a level that isn't off-putting, so you don't have to know a whole bunch of esoteric commands to do well. So it leads you through. Yeah, I mean, we've always had this problem. We always knew that there's going to be this problem. In the days before we had graphics, we knew there was going to be this problem. Text is the superior medium. People who play text MUDs will stay for, I mean, decades. I've got players of MUD 2 today who were playing 30 years ago. I mean, they stay for a long, long time. But all that means nothing if you can't get them to play in the first place. And the big barrier is text. You can fancy it up by putting in graphics and illustrations and so on. And you can smarten up the interface so it looks good. People can play with a mouse and so on. But I mean, every so often someone comes to me and says, why don't you think of putting MUD on a mobile phone? And the answer is because you can't read a mobile phone. You can't input the text very well on a mobile phone. You haven't got freeform communication. If you want to type anything, you've lost a third of your screen right there. They're meant to be played by people at keyboards. That said, if you really, really want to get people to play your MUD and can't think of anywhere else to go, try blind people, because they can't see the graphics, but they can read the text, and they can read it a lot faster than people who use their eyes to read as well.
I'd like to ask, and this will be the crescendo of the end.
Oh dear.
Are there any projects, or by projects I mean like, you know, game worlds or anything like that out there that are just so overly impressive to you that you're just like, wow, I wish I had thought of that, or the most impressive thing out there to you right now?
So you want it to be the crescendo, do you? Well, I'm sorry, no, that none of them do. There's an awful lot of work being put into them, and there's some really nice designs, and there's some virtual worlds that I think, that's really well done. That's a gem of a game. But there's none where I think, this is astonishingly good, I wish I'd done it. I mean, I wish I'd had the money to do it, but there's none like that, no. From my perspective, virtual worlds are nowhere near as good as I thought they would be by now. I was hoping that they'd be far superior to what they were. I'd hoping that we'd be able to visit them and be there, but they cost so much to make. They're too hard to adjust on the fly. They're so limited because it takes so much to put new characters in. I mean, if you wanted to add a new monster to a MUD, you can do that in 2 minutes. If you want to add a new monster to an MMO, oh yeah, well, if you can find another monster to reskin so it looks like it, you're in with a chance. But if you want something completely new, let's have a snake with fins. Well, you can't have that because we got to make a snake with fins. It's stagnating. It will improve because over time the graphics will become available and cheap, because once someone's made a snake with wings, anybody who wants to buy it for a dollar can buy it. But until that point, until we have... It's as easy to design graphical content as it is to design textual content. Progress is going to be slow. We may see something revolutionary, but evolutionary, it's not really going as fast as I was hoping. So the crescendo at the end of your show is, sadly, it's bum note, as we'd say. I'm pessimistic at the moment.
All right, so that brings us...
Yes, and on that, yeah. happy, joyous.
All right, so thank you once again for joining us. But
my pleasure. I mean, I hope I didn't rant on too long about everything, and I still think that MUDs are superior to MMOs, even if the MMO people are the ones who pay my wages, and I'll support them text over graphics forever, sadly. Until we're allowed to use tasers on people to make them play, we're in with an uphill struggle. Still, things like your show will spread the word, keep people talking, maybe get more people involved. So keep at it, guys.